Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Do you ever feel stuck on a hamster wheel, constantly running but getting nowhere? The secret is actually quite simple. When you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place, personally and professionally. It's time to get unstuck, reclaim your personal power, and recapture your zest for living. Now, here's your host, Deborah Jane Wells.
Hi, this is Deborah Jane Wells, life coach and Reiki master. Thanks for tuning into our show. Today's theme is The Wizard of Us, Transformational Lessons from Oz. As a life coach and Reiki master, I help people who were stuck in the hamster wheel approach to life, trapped by fear and the mistaken belief that busyness is the same as purpose. They can't stand the way they're living but feel powerless to stop. Each week on this show, my guests and I share a more fulfilling alternative. Instead of choosing to live as a victim of circumstance, embrace the transformative power of loving yourself unconditionally, choosing to fuel yourself with constructive core energy based in love, respect, curiosity, compassion, and gratitude produces a life of generous, effortless, gracious flow filled with faith, hope, prosperity, peace, and joy. Your experience shifts from victim to victory, breakdown to breakthrough. Choosing love as your core energy changes everything, your perceptions, opportunities, relationships, and priorities. When love transforms your relationship with yourself, it can't help but transform your personal life, your work, and the world. I'm especially pleased to welcome today's guest, Jean Houston. Jean is a visionary thinker, teacher, and philosopher who pioneered the human potential movement during the late 70s and developed the social artistry leadership model used by the United Nations Development Group. Over the course of her work, Jean has developed a worldwide network of social leaders, educators, and philosophers such as Aldous Huxley, Joseph Campbell, Carl Jung, Helen Keller, and Margaret Mead, giving her unique insight into human potential. Jean reaches millions of people throughout the year via her teleseminars, lectures, and symposiums. According to Evolving Wisdom, the author is the single most successful teleseminar giver, with the exception of Oprah, in the industry. Jean has worked with UNICEF, the United Nations, NASA, and others. She has written over 26 books in her lifetime. Her latest book is The Wizard of Us, on Beyond Words, Atria. You can find her on the web at www.jeanhouston.com. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you so much, Deb. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
So does it blow you away when you hear your own description?
Well, you know, I keep thinking of something that my daddy once said to me. Honey pot, you're as common as pig's tracks. And he said that laughingly, but I've taken that as my mantra.
Well, you know, what I have found is your life is an inspiring example of the transformation that's possible when you shift from fueling yourself with fear to fueling yourself with unconditional self-love. And I know in this first segment, you're going to share with us a story from your past about when things transform from misery-making melodrama into the flow of love and the change that happened.
Oh, right. Would you like me to tell that story?
I would love you to tell that story.
Well, I was at Barnard College a very long time ago, and I was the golden girl. I was that person you hated, whose hand was up all the time. I mean, a bird could have built its nest on my hand. And I was in a state of great galloping self-esteem. I had lots of dates. I had I was president of this and that, and I had many, many roles in the school. And the ancient Greek tragedies warn us that when this level of pride and hubris rises, then nemesis, catastrophe, occurs. Mm. And my life was no exception to that ancient form. And it happened very suddenly. Three members of my, pretty close members of my family died within 3 months of each other. I was playing off-Broadway. The Provincetown Playhouse. And the scenery fell on my head, and I was blinded, or mostly blinded, for quite a period of time, the next month. And not only that, but my mind just wasn't working. I used to be pretty good as a speaker, and I started just to stutter, and I just stopped speaking. And what else happened? My grades went from being pretty good to D minus. Mm. And so I was, and public elections were held to replace me in all my roles, including being director of the junior class play and all of that. I was like 18 or 19 at the time. Well, what happened is that I was told I had to leave the school because I no longer had the mind to do academic work. And when I complained that I'd had the mind, they said, yes, dear, that's what happens when young women get interested in other things. It's a matter of hormones, my dear. Now, nowadays, we would punch them in the snoot, you know. When those...
Yeah.
Okay. So I took to eating my peanut butter and jelly sandwich down at the green room of the college, Barnard College, where I had spent so many happy hours rehearsing plays. And I was told I could take one more course and before I was thrown out. And so I decided to take a course in the Old Testament because I felt like Job. I used to say to God, where are the boils? That's the only thing I'm missing. And the young professor who was teaching decided that he was not going to teach the Old Testament. He was going to teach about the transvaluation of values in St. Paul and Nietzsche. Well, he was tremendous, the power and passion of the Sorbonne, you know, existentialism, transcendentalism, phenomenology. He was just extraordinary, Gnosticism. And I, instead of just cowering in the black back of the class, not ever asking anything, but raising my hand tentatively and asking a question now and then. And he would answer with great passion. Well, there I am, you know, yelling at God, saying, where are the boils? When suddenly I show up. I, meaning Jean, 20 years later, at the age of 38. I didn't see or hear anything differently. All I can say is that she was really quite a robust person, and she said, come on, kiddo. The life is going to be a great life. It's going to be very exciting. It's not going to be what you think it is now. Forget about that. Now, get up, and I want you to walk across Columbia University. And I don't want to do that. No, you're just my hallucination or my headache. I know what I am. Come on, get up and walk across Columbia University. You need the air and things will happen. So in order to get away from her, I went and walked across Columbia University with, by the way, an umbrella, because when I was carrying a cane, people were tripping me up in the halls because some really nasty professor of mine had written not to believe anything that had happened to me. It was all just a big... So I had my umbrella walking across, and suddenly I heard a voice behind me, and it was my great professor, Dr. Talbus. And he said, Miss Houston, wait a minute. I really want to talk to you. He had a fairly thick accent. Yes, Professor Talbus. You know, you have a most interesting mind. Me, I have a mind? I thought I had no mind at all. The questions you ask are loomis. Tell me, Miss Houston, what do you think is really the transvaluation of values in St. Paul and Nietzsche? And I said, I don't know. Oh, of course you know. You couldn't ask the questions you do without knowing. Please, Miss Houston, it is so important for my reflections that I have your reflections. I'm astonished by that. I said, well, if you put it that way, and then I was off and running. And I got my eyesight mostly back within about a couple of weeks, and my grades went back up. And what is the irony is I was to have been kicked out of school for no mind at the end of, and a year and a half later, I was teaching at Columbia University.
Ah, I love that story.
Now, but you see, the point is, let's go then, you know, years later to the, there I am, I'm 38, and it's a beautiful day, and I'm teaching a course in this beautiful garden about getting in touch with the younger parts of yourself. And it was such a beautiful day, I decided that I'll do it too. So I went back, and I found this poor girl sitting in the green room of Barnard College. And remember, I had completely forgotten this incident. I said, hey, kid, come on, come on. It's going to be a fascinating life. Come on, get up, get up. Walk across Cone University. And it was only months later that I recognized that at 18 or 19, I had met myself at 38. And at 38, I found myself talking to that girl. A timeless time, time past, time future, all gathered in time present, according to a lot of the new quantum physics, as you know, the simultaneity of time.
Yeah, the idea that it's linear is an illusion. The idea that it's linear is illusion.
Yeah, we have a hard time understanding that because we've been so programmed to understand the arrow of time from past to present into future. But evidently, that is not so at the quantum level.
So many things I love about your story. I love the fact that there you were, so obviously brilliant at a young age, and yet you had people all around you trying to convince you that you weren't, who were probably in large measure motivated by jealousy and other fear-based emotions. And then you had this, quote, accident, which, of course, I don't believe there are any accidents, and I suspect you come from that school, too. You had this wonderful opportunity, this experience where you could be injured and have some of your senses compromised for a time, and then decide what you were going to do with that. Now, were you going to sort of wallow in victimhood, which is very easy to do when you've had something. I mean, losing your eyesight, that's not trivial. I had an eye infection many years ago and lost my eyesight in the process, and it was pretty freaky. But you had all of these teachers around you.
Well, there was very little empowerment, I must say. But what happened is that my future self empowered my past self. You know, and subsequently in some of my seminars, that's something I show people how to do. You know, transcend the notion of linear time, not a major time. I mean, not if somebody died and you're going to turn that around, you can't do that. But something that is fairly modest, where you actually enter into time. And you redo the story, and you keep redoing it and redoing it and redoing it until it takes. And then suddenly the thing that supposedly actually happened fades away like a dream, and your insert, the one that you have recreated of the new past, begins to become the dominant memory. Now, I've done this enough with people. I've done it with at least 300-400 research subjects and many, many more seminar participants. And what I do is I first have them find out if there was some relative or friend who remembered the incident as it supposedly actually happened. And then when they do this enough that it takes and they can really remember a very different kind of past, then they check with their friend or relative. And not in every case, but in a surprising number, the friend or relative remembers it as it has been reinserted, the Akashic record, if you will. You are seeing the field of mind itself.
Wow. And sometimes that work doesn't take that dramatic a form. Sometimes it's that with the benefit of more experience and time passing, you can perceive and appreciate the value. You know, I have my own victim to victory story, which my listeners have heard me talk about before, and you and I have talked about, and yet now, you know, people will say to me, well, you know, you had to get to be age 55 before you finally got it. And I say, thank God it didn't take me any longer. But the beauty of it is that everything I experienced, the things that we tend to label in our dualistic way as good and the things that were painful that we tend to label as bad, see, it's all good because it all served the highest good, because part of why you and I can come to the point we're at in life and serve and teach others and help others find healing and growth is because we went through all the things that we went through.
No question of that. Sophocles, what was it in Greek? He said, wisdom through suffering, wisdom that comes from these issues of really being flattened out or having been wrongly damaged or betrayed. And the point is to look at the betrayal or the wrongness mythically as part of a much larger journey and a much larger growth experience. I mean, I actually know a few people, not too many, but I know a few to whom nothing ever happens. They've had a very sweetful life of what I can only describe as a serial monotony. There's really nothing major that happens. And thus, when the big blows actually do happen, they are unprepared. The wounding that has led to the transformation of the self, the strengthening, the understanding, the radical compassion, they don't have that.
And I'm finding an interesting number of people. I'm really coming to understand that the smart and driven ones, you know, and I will put you and me in that group, you know, and others, the smart and driven ones often have to be kind of really stopped in their tracks and knocked right down to their knees or lower before they'll stop and to say, ooh, maybe there's another way to go. Maybe there's another way to see. I'm meeting an amazing number of people who, like me, had these high-flying executive careers where they traveled all over the world and they made a lot of money and they had what the world deems as power and business, a business sense, and very interesting roles. And each of them at some point, you know, had that dark night of the soul where it didn't matter. It didn't matter. They had all the money and the titles and the stuff. They realized that, as I describe it, as Parker Palmer describes it, their soul and their role had gotten so totally disconnected along the way that they weren't living their life anymore.
Well, no question about that. The issue of disconnection between body, mind, and soul has been often so awful in our time.
Yeah.
I've just come from China. And I was at a very, very important conference where I spoke, and ambassadors and heads of state were there, and many, many Chinese, famous Chinese scientists, and to just deal with the ecological collapse. China is collapsing ecologically. The poison, the fish are dying, the vertebrates are becoming extinct, the air you try to breathe in Beijing is like breathing cotton wool, and they know they are in big, big time trouble. The desert is just expanding in all directions. And they know that they have to do something. They have to do something, but a lot of it is, and as I gave in my speech, has to do with a lack of, not just a lack of balance, but a lack of understanding of the importance of the development of the inner ecology of the self, the incredible capacities and understandings and compassion and love and heartfulness and sensibility that is there within, the enormous creativity that is there beneath the surface crust of consciousness that then you bring to bear upon the external issues, and then you begin to recreate the world. I say my speech was well received.
Well, and that's a great place for us to stop right now and take a 2-minute break, and we will come back and have more.
Stay connected. Sign up for our newsletter. Go beyond your favorite Voice America shows. Visit iradioblog.com.
Inspired by today's show? Visit Deborah at djwlifecoach.com and click on the current offers tab to access her proven life coaching programs and tools. Everything from her signature workbooks and videos to entertaining and inspiring blogs and newsletters. You'll even have the opportunity to sign up for a 60-minute complimentary coaching session. If someone offered you a precious gift for an hour of your time, would you be interested? That's what Deborah offers in a comp session. It isn't a brief demo or sample. It's a full 45-minute coaching session focused on your current real-life challenges, plus 15 minutes to discuss any questions you may have about her approach. Those who've experienced Deborah's comp sessions will tell you that when you show up fully committed to your own growth and open to the possibilities for transformation, big breakthroughs happen. What have you got to lose other than your fears and limiting beliefs? Visit the current offers tab on djwlifecoach.com. Choose your energy and change your life.
This is the home of the top life coaches, entrepreneurs, and success drivers. The Voice America Empowerment Channel.
You are listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life with Deborah Jane Wells. If you have a question or comment for the program today, please call us toll-free at 888-346-9141. That's 888-346-9141. Or you may send an email to Deborah at djwlifecoach.com. Now, back to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life.
Hi, everyone. This is Deborah again. Welcome back to our show with my guest, Jean Houston.
In the previous segment, we discussed how choosing to fuel ourselves with fear-based core energy creates misery in our lives, and how choosing to fuel ourselves with love creates a life of generous, effortless, gracious flow instead. In this second segment, Jean and I will explore the many facets of her work in the world, starting with her newest book entitled The Wizard of Us, Transformational Lessons from Oz. I've read Jean's book and highly recommend it. I found it inspiring and thought-provoking on so many levels. We're definitely kindred spirits. So many of its themes and lessons resonate with those of my work in the world as a life coach, Reiki master, organization transformation consultant, speaker, healer, artist, author, and broadcast personality. Jean, you've written many amazing books. What called you to write this particular book at this particular time?
Well, you know, Joseph Campbell, you know, the great mythologist, and I were good friends, and we did a lot of work together. And subsequently, I have written a certain number of books out of my 27 now published books. I've written a number that really deal with mythic themes, but often they dealt with very complex mythic themes: Isis and Osiris, Parsifal, the Ramayana. And I knew, and people said, well, why don't you write an American one? And I said, well, what do you think is the great core story? And everybody said, The Wizard of Oz. And it seemed to me that when I really went back into that story, I was astonished at how relevant and precise it was with regard to where we are. Like Dorothy, we are living in an outmoded situation. She's in, Dust Bowl, Kansas. We are in horrible ecological crisis. I talked about China, but it's worldwide. She knows that she is not being heard, that her yearning is so intense, and she's all dressed up with this tremendous yearning with no place to go. Nobody's paying attention to her. Her deeper spiritual needs are not being met. And it takes a tornado, and God knows we're in the middle of tornadoes, a real crisis. I mean, what is the crisis in people's lives? Is it illness? Is it divorce? Is it the loss of job? Is it the loss of the sense of self? Whatever it is, often it is that wounding that we talked about, that being the sacrificial lamb on the altar of history that then activates in us that sense of there is so much more. And you hear this tremendous yearning somewhere over the rainbow, and it takes the tornado to get her there. And once she's there, the whole of reality shifts. It's not the dull, gray, straight up and down lines of Kansas. It is effulgent, gorgeous flowers and shapes and funny little people who represent a high civilization. You know, we represent the Lollipop League. And then there is the great archetypal friend, what I call the Entelechy, the deep higher guidance in Glinda, who is there as her support system throughout. And then she is placed. So in all of these, as you know, I give exercises to activate the inner sensory life, to activate the sense of being in deep companionship with the highest form of guidance in one's inner life, what I call the higher guidance, the deeper self, the Entelechy, which means it's the Entelechy of an acorn to be an oak tree. It's the Entelechy of a baby to be a grown-up human being. It's the Entelechy of each one of those who are listening to this show to be so much, much more than we ever thought we can be. In a sense, our personal present lives are the fetus of our next life. I don't mean never in reincarnation. I mean now, here in this space and time. So then she's put on the road of spiritual pollen. By the way, a theme that occurs in many, many, many great stories, the road of spiritual pollen, the yellow brick road. And there she meets, then, the disenfranchised parts of herself and her society, disenfranchised, rejected mind, and the scarecrow, who, of course, has extraordinary mind, disenfranchised, disempowered heart, and the tin man, who has a massive heart and deep, deep radical empathy, and, of course, disempowered courage in the lion, who really does the most extraordinarily courageous thing throughout the story, even though his knees are knocking the whole time, you know. And so what do I do in this book? I show you ways of activating, rewiring the mind, rewiring the brain, repatterning, finding new ways of thinking, seeing, learning, knowing, becoming. And then in the heart, again, processes to greatly amplify one's tender knowing to cross the great divide of otherness and to be there totally with and for all others as well as for oneself. And then ultimately the lion, the courage, the need, the courage to be, which is one of the most important qualities of our time, where most people don't know what to do with our time. You know, in the past, your name was Weaver. You lived on Weaver Lane. Your parents and grandparents have been weavers, and you were going to be a weaver. Now, it's very different. We live 5 to 100 times amount of sheer experience compared to our ancestor of 100 years ago. Most of us have not been trained to what to do with all of this. You know, I work with leadership at every level all over the world, from heads of state to the man who pushes the broom in his leper colony in southern India. And everywhere I find that people have been trained for another time, another era, where we can't get rid of it. One of the things that this journey to Oz, what I try to do in this book, is train people up to be real stewards of their lives, their families' lives, this time in history and the planet, in this the most important time in human history. I realize other times thought they were it. They're wrong. They're wrong, Deborah. This is it. So naturally you're going to run into being stopped, what I call the entropy principle. Remember that wonderful scene where the witch writes in red across the sky, "Surrender, Dorothy." Well, she's not about to, because she's gone in a team. Now, this is something very important, because this is how the heroine's journey does vary from most of the hero's journey. Often the hero is this lonely person just battling it all by himself. In the heroine's journey, she takes others. She takes other parts of herself. She takes the team. And she does it with great, great compassion and deeply seeing the beauty and the power in the mind and the possibility in the others that she brings along with her. That's the heroine's journey. The emphasis is on the process, not necessarily on the product. And, of course, it's true that the journey to the wizard is the journey of process. It's the journey of transformation. It's the journey of becoming. So when they finally get to that wizard, you know, they discover that and have gotten the broom of the witch, the wicked witch, they discover that really he's really not much, as by his own words, he's not much of a wizard, but he is a very kindly good man. He's a tremendous psychotherapist, because he gives each one the symbol of what they really need, you know, the ticking heart to the Tin Man, the doctor of psychology to the scarecrow, and of course the badge of courage to the lion. And when she finally says, "Well, what about me?" And he wants to take her home, but of course that wouldn't work. She's got to discover the secret of what she really is and was and will be and can be, and the enormous powers within herself, which are there symbolically in the ruby slippers, slippers of life. And so these slippers click 3 times, take her home. And when she gets home, she says, "Oh, it was all in my own backyard," because the characters in farm life look like the characters in Oz. And of course, that's a tremendous statement of the creative unconscious of the human mind, the human life that we all have within us. So what I try to do in this book is literally give you something of her experience in your terms. You know, expanding your mind, expanding your heart, deepening your courage, taking the risk, finding the great spiritual friend of the soul, the Glinda, if you will, and finally discovering that the wizard is us, you know. And so much so that we have the tremendous possibility of becoming the possible human who can, as with the Emerald City, create the possible society.
Yeah, two of the things that you talk about in the book, there's so many things that move me. And one is this idea of re-greening our world with creativity and gratitude and humor and joy. And I'm such a huge believer in the power of gratitude. Gratitude for universal abundance. You know, one of my things I say is gratitude for universal abundance fosters flow filled with faith and hope and prosperity and peace and joy. And the other thing I love, and as a life coach, this is core to the way I work with people, is that you carry everything inside you You have all that wisdom inside you. It's just your own fear has created blocks for your ability to access it. And when you can notice that fear, fully embrace it, and then transform it into love, your ability to then manifest what you seek. And you talk about the fact that we are God's seeds growing into God's selves. And that, you know, you are a precious resource not to be squandered, and that we need you now. You know, and if you set your intention and align your energy, the universe will put in motion forces that will manifest your heart's desire so quickly it will be like closing your eyes and clicking your heels three times.
I quite agree. That's a wonderful, wonderful use of the metaphor, yes. Yeah, you know, we forget that we don't just live in the universe. The universe lives in us.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not just the latest product of the metabolism of the galaxy. We are that guided, guiding energy and massive intelligence that is there holographically stored probably in every cell of our body. But to make that shift from being an encapsulated bag of skin dragging around a dreary little ego to being organism environment, to being God self incarnate in a space-time vehicle, our body-mind systems, when you really come into that and you really know it and feel it viscerally, then everything shifts. I was once with Sai Baba in India. And I heard him give a sermon. He was very funny. He said, "The only difference between me and all of you is I remember I'm God and you've forgotten."
Yeah.
But it's that we are the universe in miniature. And this has been a very important part of my work, to help people really know that, really, really, really know that.
One of my favorite affirmations, and it came to me when I started to pay attention, as I had started to really transform my own life and my own experience and go from someone who had been, you know, severely clinically depressed for 10 years, utterly burned out from this 30-year high-flying career and 80 pounds overweight, and started to transform the physical side and then started to transform the mental, spiritual, and emotional side.
Yes.
I realized that it was interesting to look at what still threw me off center. And as I did, the common denominator I found is that my problems arose when I forgot who I was and whose I was. That when I knew in every moment that I was a unique co-creative expression of the divine, what was there to fear?
Mm-hmm.
But when I forgot that, I had the sense of being up on a high wire, no humans around, no net, and I'm feeling kind of dizzy. And so help to keep ourselves centered in that place. And that when the flying monkeys come along, and I loved the image of them for, you know, what I call the gremlin energy.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I teach that we each have this internal board of directors, a sage, a guardian, and a muse. And it's great when it's all love and light. You know, they've been there with us from the very beginning. They're just vehicles for different aspects of our own energy, but it's a useful construct. So when it's all love and light, it's great. But when they start to get fueled by fear, then everything starts to get out of whack. And so I love the idea of thinking of the flying monkeys as a manifestation of the gremlin energy when it gets going. And you talked about that road of trials and that everything's an opportunity, and about recognizing and neutralizing those flying monkeys with reconciliation and remembered joy.
Well, no question of that. You know, because of the nature of the brain, that we really have three brains, maybe even four. One is the old reptilian complex that gives us our survival. Watch out for this. Look out for that. Oh, run here. Jump, you know. And unfortunately, it's so dominant that we then begin to become frightened of things that are really very minimal in our lives. And then we have the limbic system, the emotional brain, with thundering herds of mammalian beasts still going over. You know? And then, of course, this incredible new brain, which is part biocomputer and part evolutionary genius and part curious, peculiar weirdo, you know. And the very fact that we have great nature in her infinite wisdom has kept these brains somewhat apart from each other. And so part of our job is to really weave them together. Now, what is very interesting in this story of the Wizard of Oz is, look, you have interspecies communication and interbrain communication. You've got a little white girl, Dorothy. You have got a man made out of straw. That is, so you've got the agricultural kingdom. You've got the man made out of minerals so that you have the mineral kingdom. You have the lion, you have the animal kingdom, and of course little Toto. You've got the archetypal, you've got the spiritual kingdom, which is Glinda, and you have got the great road of possibilities, which is really putting the whole brain and mind together, working in such a way as to bring us home to who and what we really are, the great transcendent function that we are God's stuff incarnate in space and time.
And that is a perfect place for us to take our next break, and we will be back in 2 minutes.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Inspired by today's show? Visit Deborah at djwlifecoach.com and click on the Current Offers tab to access her proven life coaching programs and tools. Everything from her signature workbooks and videos to entertaining and inspiring blogs and newsletters. You'll even have the opportunity to sign up for a 60-minute complimentary coaching session. If someone offered you a precious gift for an hour of your time, would you be interested? That's what Deborah offers in a comp session. It isn't a brief demo or sample. It's a full 45-minute coaching session focused on your current real-life challenges, plus 15 minutes to discuss any questions you may have about her approach. Those who've experienced Deborah's comp sessions will tell you that when you show up fully committed to your own growth and open to the possibilities for transformation, big breakthroughs happen. What have you got to lose other than your fears and limiting beliefs? Visit the Current Offers tab on djwlifecoach.com. Choose your energy and change your life.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life with Deborah Jane Wells. If you have a question or comment for the program today, please call us toll-free at 888-346-9141. That's 888-346-9141. Or you may send an email to Deborah at djwlifecoach.com. Now, back to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life.
Hi, Deborah here. Welcome back to our show with my guest, Jean Houston. In the first two segments, Jean and I examined the transformative power of choosing love as your core fuel to get off the hamster wheel and create a life of flow. And the key insights provided by the beloved classic film, The Wizard of Oz, as shared in Jean's latest book, The Wizard of Us. In the final segment of today's show, we're going to take a closer look at two additional aspects of Jean's work in the world, social artistry and the Renaissance of Spirit. Jean, what exactly is social artistry?
Well, social artistry is a whole field that I helped invent. And it takes as its form the work of an artist. An artist has tremendous skills, focus, intentionality, follow-through. I'm talking about a good artist, whether it is for music or painting or sculpture or architecture or whatever. A social artist has the same qualities: focus, skill, intentionality, stick-to-itness. But his or her canvas is not the music paper or the canvas for painting. The canvas is society itself. So he or she brings these skills to bear upon society, and I've trained people now for probably 15 years in becoming social artists. And we go into many countries. We're invited by the UN and other organizations into many countries to profoundly teach people at every level how to cross the great divide of otherness, how to actualize the incredible number of capacities that we have on sensory and physical levels, on psychological levels, on mythic symbolic levels, and ultimately sourced in spirit itself. And as we activate all of these different capacities, we then bring these capacities to bear upon social problems, be it issues of economics, or be it issues of war, or be it even issues of how to create societies which truly work to the betterment of almost everyone, you see. So I've been doing this all over the world. We have transformed whole societies as doing this. There's no guru. You know, guru is spelled G-U-R-U. There's often no money involved. You know, there is a very high spirit. I'll give you an example. So let's say I go into southern India, which I've done often. Now, I'm 5 feet 11. Many of these people are not even 5 feet tall, okay? So what do? I dress in a sari. I always dress badly, whether I like it or not. The little ladies come up to me. Oh, sister, you look absolutely terrible, terrible. Let us fix you. You know, so already we've crossed the great divide. I learn a lot of their jokes. I learn 500 to 1,000 of their words. I learn what they're. I share with them our deepest wishes and our feelings. And before you know it, we are there together. And then they say, can you help us? We have a terrible problem with water. Yes, well, where is the water? Well, it's over here, but you see it is running next to the slime and it's getting it very bad. So we find other places, good water together. And then we build up a system in which people are both, you know, keeping the water clean and sharing, and there's no money involved. And then they said, we see, so it goes on and on. We create, and then we bring the men and women together so they honor each other in a new way, men and women as full partners in the full domain of human affairs, and not women just having all the grunt roles, you know.
Yeah.
And above all, what we do is we set up new relationships with adjacent societies, even adjacent countries. So it becomes a collaborative effort. And what I do in my work is to work in such a way that the real solutions come from them, not from me, you see, or from my associates. That's social artistry.
Yeah. And I understand that at the core of your approach is a 10-day summer leadership institute. Is that right?
There isn't leadership institute. They can go to Jean Houston Foundation or socialartistry.org. And there's plenty. Jean Houston Foundation is my foundation that supports this work in social artistry, or they can go to just socialartistry.org.
Well, I love it. And it is inspiring and sounds amazing. So take us into this concept from there of the renaissance of spirit.
Oh, my friend, we are in a tremendous renaissance, as great, I do believe, as the renaissance that occurred between the late 14th and early 17th century in Europe. You know, where suddenly perspective bloomed. You suddenly saw, through the telescope, you saw that we were not at the center of the universe, you know.
Yeah.
Through the microscope, we saw the infinitely small. We saw how people created perspectives in music. You know, music became polyphony, multiple harmonies. Perspective in architecture, instead of just plain old Roman forms, you had these great structures like you found in the great Vatican cathedrals, Michelangelo's work on the Duomo. I mean, when you look into the nature of exploring the human being, what does Shakespeare say? What a piece of work is man! You know, how marvelous, how extraordinary. And we suddenly discovered all of our inner capacities to match our outer capacities. And with the new discoveries in science, in art, in music, in literature, in language, the world shifted. The world turned up. Well, we're in an even larger form because we now know that we are embedded in the cosmos. We now know that we have infinite fields of possibility within ourselves that we could not have had when we lived in fairly limited, encapsulated societies. And we now know that we're in the time of grow or die, so we really have to grow up or we're finished. We're finished in about 200 years if we don't start growing up now. So these are the times. We are the people. We are in a renaissance. Rinascita, it says in Italian. It's literally a rebirth of the next order of our humanness, wherein we have to become adequate stewards of this time, adequate stewards of the earth in her process, in the saving of the earth in her air and water and all of her inner and outer capacities. We either become either the neurons, the mind of the planet, or we become her cancer. And this is the time to become her neurons. It is Renaissance. Renaissance often occurs in times of tremendous difficulty and struggle, which then forces us to go inward like Leonardo and to really become aware of the immense possibilities, qualities, and if you will, spiritual or psychological support systems that are there for us to carry us into the next, hopefully glorious stage of our becoming.
Well, and it's interesting how our conversation is just going full cycle back to our beginning of this show, where we talked about the fact that these times of great trials, the times when we are like perched on the precipice and about to go over and are in great pain, that they are times of great opportunity if we will but wake up and free ourselves of our fear and see with that wisdom that we carry within. And I know that, you know, you're so, all of the work that you do in the world, I remember you saying you were in 108 countries last year.
108 like, wow. Countries, yeah. All told.
The work that you do in the world does so much to help support all of us in embracing that rebirth. And I know one aspect of it is the evolution of your mystery school into these Renaissance of Spirit weekend programs. Can you say more about those?
Well, yes, we have the continuity of the mystery school. The regular mystery school I ended about a year and a half ago, and so that I could do even more evocative work in smaller schools, because those schools were very, very large. They went on for 29 years. I have 130,000 unpublished pages of work that came out of that school. But I do have, for example, if they go to JaneHouston.com, they will find it. There's one coming up, not this weekend, but the following weekend in Petaluma at the Ion Center, which is near San Francisco. And then the following week, there's one at the Open Center in New York City. And we're going to actually look at the nature of the tornadoes in our lives and how they carry us into the Ozification of our life. It's going to be a tremendous seminar if anybody's interested or listening now. But they'll go to JaneHouston.com and look at Mystery School and they'll find it. But Mystery School explores the fact that we are the mystery. And what we try to do is school you in your own enormous mysterious capacities.
So we have about a minute left, Jean, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to thank you, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to share just a final inspirational thought with our listeners.
Well, the thought is that you are the one who made it. You who are listening, you are the sperm that made it. They have all those million sperms swimming like mad upstream to meet the ultimate ovum, you know, and the very chance of you being here at all is like a trillion to one. And here you are in this precious incarnation in this gorgeous planet at the outer edge of the galaxy, not in the center. It's God's school. You've been selected and elected for God's school, meaning by that the school in which you are able to access in this most incredible time this enormous generosity, this treasure house of being, of capacity, of love, of feeling, of intelligence, of spirit, and to really take this together and to do something about it, to be available to the higher guidance that will lead you into opportunities hitherto undreamed of, hitherto not known, but now in this extraordinary time. You are being called, you are being quickened, you are being awakened to a life larger than your previous aspirations, more gorgeous than all your dreams.
Thank you. And I accept that call. This is Deborah Jane Wells signing off for now. Tune in again next week when I'll be joined by Eugene Holden for an episode entitled Recognizing and Embracing Your Authentic Path. Many thanks to my guest today, Jean Houston, and to my incredible Voice America production team that keeps me on track and makes this show possible. When you explore my Voice America host page, you'll find more information about upcoming episodes and the nature of life coaching, with opportunities to listen to recordings of past episodes, subscribe to my blog and other social media feeds, and sign up for special offers to guide you on your journey to wholeness, including a 60-minute complimentary coaching session. Remember, when you fall in love with yourself, everything else falls into place, personally and professionally. You are loved and loving, blessed and a blessing, and so it is. Namaste.
Thanks again for listening to Choose Your Energy, Change Your Life. Please rejoin your host, Deborah Jane Wells, again next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's time to get off that hamster wheel and start fulfilling your destiny by creating a life you love.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.